The recordings have started.
Great. Thank you, Sam. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on the 2nd of May, 2016 at 2200 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? All right, thank you. I'd like to remind you all to also please state your name for speaking for transcription purposes. Also, please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. Steve, I'd like to turn the call back over to you. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Steve Coates. I'll be leading the call today. And let's go right to the agenda review. So number one on the agenda review. Number two, roll call and any updates to the statements of interest. Number three, review of action items. Number four, subject discussion. 4.2.7, application assessed in rounds continued from our last call. Agenda number five, subject discussion 4.2.2, predictability, continued from our last call. Number six, subject discussion 4.2.4, community engagement. And then finally, subject discussion, assuming we get to it, 4.216, application submission limits. I will start with a roll call. We have everyone listed in the participants recorded as being present, as well as anyone who chimed in as calling in. Number two, any updates to the statements of interest? If you have made any job changes, any interest changes that you need to update to your statement of interest for the GNSO, please do so. Number three, review of action items. Jeff, I think you were taking this one on. Am I remembering correctly? Apologies.
Sure, I can. If that's totally fine. Are we going to display that or? There we go. Okay, this is Jeff Newman. So, for those of you that have not seen this, and I know we introduced this topic last week, but this is a really good chart where we try to capture each of the action items from the previous calls, and you'll see it goes all the way back. I don't know if everyone's got scroll control, but it goes all the way back to the beginning, and it's got this one's not color-coded, but it is color-coded on the actual page. So you can see the items that are closed, the items that are still under consideration, and who specifically is assigned those tasks. I'm actually going to flip on mine to the colored ones because I think it's easier to monitor. You'll see, for example, in the colored one, I know you can't see it now, but it's on the wiki, and it's under the working group documents. It's letter E, as you can see. And so if it's complete, it's green, and so you can see that most of them are complete. The there's a few of them that staff still has to complete. One is getting a Word version of the applicant guidebook. We are still looking at, unless Steve, you have an update on Steve Chan, unless you have an update, we have, we're still looking at the geographic distribution to determine whether these are the most appropriate times for the calls. So that's still something we need to finish up and hopefully set a deadline. Let's see if we can do this by the next call. We have already started our in action item 21, we started our coordination with the leadership of the CCTRT and have set a call every few weeks. And we have established, as of the last call, Avery, I believe, is leading the volunteer drafting team for questions. I don't think there's been a call yet out for actually having a first meeting, unless, Avery, you tell me otherwise. And then each of the subjects that we've been reviewing is listed as the last item. So each of the subjects, the overall questions, have their own Google Doc page where we are typing in things like the pros and cons, which we'll talk more about today with the predictability, and each of the other subject matters gets its own page. So I think it's a really good asset. I think everyone should go to that page to see where we are and what still needs to be done. If we miss something for whatever reason, please let us know, and we'll make sure it's added to the list. So I think that's it, unless there's any questions. Avery.
Yeah, hi. Just to answer your question, no. With me coming to Geneva this week, I did not start anything on the drafting. I did want to ask, Steve, we had talked somewhat about the timing of the calls, and so I was wondering if, yeah, especially now that I happen to be in Europe and happen to be experiencing the lovely timing, I was wondering, how it was going in the time search to let people know.
Thanks, Avery. Thanks, Jeff. This is Steve Chan from ICANN staff. So in regards to the timing of the calls, staff had performed some analysis of the geographical dispersion. We had actually done this prior to even scheduling any of the calls. And so what we saw at this point is that the geographical dispersion really hasn't changed much. What we see is actually about 90% of the membership has identified the Americas and EMEA, or the European, Middle East, Africa, as their preferred time zones. So realizing that the times can be challenging, like actually this one in particular is challenging for Europe, as Avery noted, and then the 1600 time is challenging for the Asia-Pacific. Carlton, can you hear me better now? I just saw the note from you. Waiting for a response. I'll just go ahead and go on. So realizing that these times are challenging, there's really, unfortunately, no perfect times, and there's no perfect solutions. I think we've seen a few people have concerns about the timing of these calls, but what we're not able to determine is whether or not this is a widespread feeling, whether or not the rotating times that we have now, if there's widespread challenges with these times. So I think if people have comments about that, I would welcome them bringing these up either on this call or perhaps on the list. Realizing that there will always be a few people that have problems with the times, we're trying to figure out whether or not it warrants actually changes to the scheduled calls to share the pain a little bit more than we already are. So if anyone has any comments now, I'd welcome them now. Otherwise, we welcome them on the list. Seeing no comments at this point, I also had a comment on the...
We have one comment from Heather Forrest that says these calls have been a bit rough for Asia-Pacific time zones, so I just wanted to make sure that was not missed.
Thank you.
And then Heather does go on to say a rotation would be helpful to share the pains.
Heather, we always welcome specific suggestions. As I'm sure you're aware, this is always challenging for all of us to make it work for everyone. So certainly welcome suggestions. And so I also wanted to make a comment about the constituency comment one drafting team that I think was mentioned by Jeff as well as Aubrey for a bit. So what I think I'd like to do is send a note around to the volunteers that put forth their names on the last meeting. And so I guess I just wanted to also highlight that this CC1, as Avery had called it, I think, is in regards to the set of subjects for this first set that we're looking at, which includes whether or not we should cancel subsequent procedures, predictability, community engagement, applications assessed in rounds, whether or not there should be different TLD types, and whether or not should be application submission limits. So that is the overall scope of CC1. I think we might want to entertain also seeking comment on the catalog of advice and statements from SOs and ACs. There was a little bit of confusion between staff and the working group leadership whether or not that particular item was going to be included in CC1 or whether or not it was going to be a separate communication. I think it may have been a staff suggestion just to synchronize timing. I would welcome any comments on whether or not it makes sense to combine the communications going out in CC1, whether or not we want all six subjects plus that particular question to also be included. So if there's any comments on that, I would welcome those now. Aubrey, please, go ahead.
Yes, thanks. This is Aubrey speaking. My issue with it was that I thought that those were something that we really did need to take a look at while we were doing these overalls, just to see whether there were any questions in these overarching issues contained in that we wanted to include. So I had felt that one of the reasons we had decided to put it as part of this first bit of work before sending out the CC1 was just so that we would know what the catalog of things that had already been said were, as opposed to combining it there. So that had been my original reason or my original understanding for why we were going ahead with it right away as opposed to waiting. Thanks.
This is Steve Chan from staff again. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. This is Jeff Newman. I agree with Aubrey. I think we should send out a communication, get as many statements cataloged as possible, and then at the end of the questions that we put out for public comment with the overall issues, I think we should have a link up to the documents and say, you know, this is what we have. Is there anything else that we've missed? So kind of the catch-all. But I do think a communication now to the chairs of or the leadership teams of each of the groups would be helpful to start collecting those statements.
Thanks, Jeff. I'll go ahead and volunteer staff to start preparing some drafts for that purpose. I think that's all I had on the action items. I'll turn it back over to, I guess, Steve Coates at this point. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. This is Steve Coates. I think that brings us back to subject discussion 4.2.7, agenda item number 4 on the list, applications assessed in rounds continued. And I will turn it back over to Jeff.
I think you're turning it over to Aubrey.
Aubrey, I'm sorry. Aubrey.
That's quite all right. I'm more than willing to let Jeff have it. Let me go to it. Okay. So this is the second pass through this one. It would be good to put up the list that we collected, which was subject to the tables of pros and cons that were collected last week in the picture as opposed to the write-up. Thank you. Ah, there it is. Fantastic. Oh, that's right. You have them in different screens. Okay. So, and if anybody wants to look on the wiki page, it's actually been nicely formatted in boxes there. So people can see it in table format if they wish to, but going back to what's here. So we collected on the pros a set of 13 of them. And I don't know whether I need to read them through or whether anyone wants to basically start on the pros. And yeah, actually, let me read them through quickly. It won't hurt. So in the first pro we had, we should continue to have rounds until pent-up demand is exhausted. And we had discussed how one measures pent-up demand. Predictability, but it would have to be some informed time to complete cycles, fixed cycle basis, as opposed to the sort of, we're doing a cycle now, and then there'll be another one, but we don't know when, which is the situation on this first one. Three, more cost-effective if evaluation procedures are extensive and repetitive. Four, rights holders, including registries, do not have to be on their toes continuously watching for new TLD applications. Five, predictability of cycles. I'm not sure how that's different from two. If it is different, we probably need to say a bit more about five. If it's not different, we can combine two and five, I would think. And if anybody has a comment when I've read one, please raise your hand. You don't need to wait for me to get to the end. Six, identical applications, i.e. contention sets, are easier to manage. Also, arguably, more fair to have contention sets rather than served. Seven, global rules and board actions can address all new applicants prior to a round. So rounds allow for consistency in rules. Eight, rounds tee up the applications for auctions better than a continuing open application window. I would note that this also assumes that auctions remain our decision of last resort, which was a decision that was actually never made in the first policy, the policy round of 2007, because we were not able to come to a decision on that one, so we left that one up to the implementation team to figure out. We may want to review that, we may not. Okay, nine, rounds allow for subsequent reviews and a cycle of improvement. 10, trademarks can be gamed. 2K for a trademark in Europe, so trademarks bypassing rounds is bad. Generic words will apply as trademarks. 11, rounds are appropriate if we have competing interests. 12, could end up like digital archery if we don't have rounds. 13, standard contracts can be applied as a base. Does anybody have any comments on those? Okay, I see Jeff, please.
Yeah, this is Jeff Newman. I was thinking about this the other day, and I think we need to have kind of a definition of what it means to have rounds. And I know it sounds sort of obvious, but if we did something like, and I'm not suggesting this is the model, but as an example, what if you said, you know, the first 3 months of the year, you would collect applications. The next 3 months, you would post them up for notice so they could have any oppositions or challenges or whatever. And then you would start again 3 months later. So you would basically have two, I'm not going to call them rounds, but two opportunities per year to submit applications. Is that considered rounds? Or even having one, quote, opening a year, do 3 months accepting applications, 3 months for oppositions, and then 6 months to review and institute changes, and then automatically start it up the next January. So, I mean, the question is, I just want us all to be on the same page as how we define rounds, because Alan's writing in there that I called them rounds, but they could be overlapping rounds. So, and that'll make a difference as we go further on to talk about how changes are made and also with predictability, the next subject. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Yes, those windows are those collection points. Paul, you have the next hand.
Thanks, Aubrey. Paul McGrady for the record. And speaking of my role as an IPC member, rather than as the GNSO Council liaison. I think that I agree with Jeff, we should be very careful about how we define rounds. And we should talk, perhaps even build out multiple models to talk through how each would work. So, for example, if a company is launching a new mega product, right, to know once a year whether or not the GTLD will be available is problematic. Probably to know every 90 days would be problematic to have that kind of waiting period where you essentially couldn't file for trademarks without tipping your hand and drawing squatters to the GTLD, whereas an open round that closes every 30 days, that what's filed during that 30 days is confidential and it's published for comments and objections, but the application window for that 30 days is closed and they're handled on a first-come, first-served basis. That would provide some predictability to rolling out new brands while not precluding anybody else from applying for that top level if they believe there's a generic use for it during that same 30-day window. Thanks.
Thanks. This is Aubrey again. I have two questions that occur to me on listening to this first discussion. One is, can we, for this purpose, define a round as what we did? In other words, the process we just went through was properly called a round at the beginning, and then we could ask whether any what you guys have described almost sounds like a rondo in music, where you're constantly having them come up. But basically, we could ask whether, you know, should we have rounds as defined previously, or should we have some other kind of cyclical mechanism for this? So we could really split the question up. I don't know that I would recommend us going down the path at the moment of trying all the possible models. Somebody should mute themselves. For coughing, but I hope you feel better soon. So I don't know that we want to necessarily go down all the possible models that one could create for a cyclical method. I think I heard like three at least in the conversation there. So would it work to just ask the question in those two ways? Should we have repeated rounds as the last one, or should we derive some other kind of cyclical method? So first I wanted to see if that was okay as a way to divide the question up. And then the other thing I wanted to understand, Paul, what you meant by you would be tipping somebody's hand if you applied for a trademark. Would that mean that people were applying for a trademark just because they wanted a TLD? Because otherwise, I don't understand why anybody in the whole world applying for a trademark would necessarily be a factor one way or another. So I don't understand. Thanks.
Sure. So this is Paul. I think that we can define round however we like. I think that what we just went through was assuming that there's a second something, whatever that turns out to be, could be considered a round. It's not really a round unless there's a second one, I suppose. Otherwise, it's just a window. But I don't want us to define what we just went through as the only definition of round, because there are all kinds of ways to time rounds. And importantly, I think the guidebook talks about how the new GTLD program will be assessed in the number of rounds, and if we all define rounds as what we just went through, we run the risk of somebody saying, aha, we have to go through again what we just went through, which had, you know, major flaws. And so that's my only concern about using the word round to describe what we just went through. With regard to the second question, I'm not talking about people who are applying for a trademark so that they can own a GTLD. I'm talking about the reality that if new GTLDs stick, and they become an important thing for a brand owner to have in order to have the full sort of, you know, the full complement of items that can be used to protect consumers from confusion. Then what we don't want to do is to create a situation where we have an open ICANN round and we have people who are watching trademark applications filed by third parties and trying to decide whether or not they should then go in and file only to be, to be in the way, to end up in an auction, to have something that they can profit from in a private auction to resolve the contention set. I think that we should have frequent closings of the window on a perpetual round, and the filings during that maybe 30-day window or so should be confidential so that the party who is launching a new brand for a new product, a real product, will have the confidence that they will both have the trademark registrations they need and also the GTLD they need to protect their consumers. I hope that's helpful. Thanks.
Thank you. That does help me understand your point. Hopefully it was, well, it's probably already clear to others because no one raised their hand on it. On the rounds, so if I understand it correctly, you disagree with us using the word round at this point to indicate what we've done before and using a phrase like cyclical mechanism to describe those things that are round-like but not like our first one when we do the questions, if I understood your point. Okay, yes, and I did want to make clear that these points that I'm reading here are not my own ideas. Perhaps my understanding of them is my own, but these were what were collected at the last meeting. I see we have Kurt Pritz, but let me go at the comments since I don't see any hands at the moment. Were there any points? There's Jay, workload produced by a round needs to be measured. Then there was Rubens, considering how long some contention sets from the 2012 round will take to solve. We will probably have overlapping rounds anyway. Then Howard, in number 10, you try to say that generic words can be manipulated as rounds. Again, I'm not making any claims. I'm just reading what was there. So if it needs to be, if something needs to be said to take a meaning out that is disturbing, please, you know, speak up and contribute some other wording or indicate what's wrong with that. It's what we came up with last time. Carlton, application opportunities in fixed time frame where all applications are resolved. I guess that's an alternate way of describing a round, and that's a possible definition, so we need to figure out how to do that, and that's something that I don't want to get into wordsmithing in this meeting. That's something that we can certainly work on in the background in these drafting teams. Carlos, we're getting closer to a definition of pipeline instead of rounds, which is another way to go. There was one other. Then Kurt had a rather long one. And I'm assuming you all want me to read them, otherwise you would have put your hand up. Start with a generic definition of rounds, a period of time with a specified opening and closing date when new GTLD applications are accepted for evaluation. One hallmark of an application round is that the timing of the application submission during a round is not used as a contention-resolving criteria, i.e., first-come, first-served does not apply. Then discuss the allocation rules once a decision is made to have rounds. Rules that apply to allocation might be length and frequency of rounds, whether they start at a date certain each year, as Jeff's ideas were suggesting. That was an aside. That wasn't in what Kurt wrote. And rules for resolving contention. I think that's a good start at a definition. I don't know what other people think. I don't know whether that satisfies you, Paul, in terms of your desire to not have rounds define defined as what we used before. And that's okay. I see no hand. Is, first of all, I guess those points are okay with people, and we'll get them recorded. Are there any pros there that are missing that people thought of during this reading or in the elapsed time? I didn't see any notes on the list on the issue, but I may have missed them. Or is that list sufficient for now? It's obviously not a closed list. We'll be getting lots of comments and input from others, but just, is that a sufficient list for now? I see no hands. I see Robin is typing. I'll wait to see what she has typed before moving on to comms. Okay, I guess she stopped typing. Or did I miss it? Oh, no, there's a couple things here. I was moving on. Okay, I had some other readings before I got to Robin's. I didn't see. We had Jay, if workload from round takes 2 years, the next round should be based on that load. Steve Coates, I think we should bifurcate the application process. I love somebody using the word bifurcate. I think we should bifurcate the application process and contention process apart from the overall process, as there are various ways this could be implemented. For example, ongoing applications could result in periodic contention sets. Fall. What we just went through was one kind of round, but we shouldn't limit the use of the word round. Just that kind of scenario, I think that's been understood. Harold, Jeff, I remember them, but I tried to highlight the redaction. I know it's not Albert's point of view. Carlton, in my view, application is a distinct phase in a round with fixed beginning and end dates. Run away, really. It'd be really good to have you guys talk as opposed to just me read. Then there's processing and finally delegation. These timelines are elastic. But the round ends when all applications are adjudicated from application to processing to delegation or not. Then Robin, it seems to me we should be first asking if we want new GTLDs at all. And only if the answer is yes, do we determine if we want rounds and what they should be. Robin, on that one, the first question that we discussed that Jeff had walked us through, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, had been that particular question. And that is certainly one of the questions that has its pros and cons and you know, will be asked in this constituency comments round. We had not thought of just sending out that one question as opposed to sending it out with a set of overarching questions. And I don't know, this is my personal opinion, that just sending out that one and then going sequentially with all of the other questions would elongate the process by quite a bit. And I don't know if you're suggesting that, but we definitely are asking, as the first question, should there be new GTLDs at all? And all these other questions are kind of conditional on that being the case. The second question, which was the types, this question, which was the rounds, et cetera. And Jeff had said that is overall question one. And then Harold, a fixed time could not be read as conditioned for others interested. Harold, I'll have to ask you to explain that because I don't understand what I just read.
Sorry, Aubrey, you were asking who?
I was asking Harold. He was addressing perhaps it's just Carlton, but a question, a fixed time could not be read as conditioned for others interested. And I was just indicating that I did not understand what the comment meant.
So this is Jeff Newman. I think there's an ongoing discussion as to
on the chat as to whether you could bifurcate the application, submitting applications from the evaluation process, and so whether you would call, if you did, quote, rounds, whether it would be rounds of accepting applications or rounds of evaluating applications or some combination. I think that's what's kind of going back and forth in the chat.
Okay, thanks for explaining it to me. Okay. So I'm seeing no other comments for new pros, in which case I see no hands, in which case I'll move to cons. The cons we collected were artificial time barriers was number one. Two, adding latency, increased time to market. Three, rounds are not an optimal process for solving competing interests. Auctions do solve them. IP rules also do solve them. Four, creates artificial demand and artificial scarcity. Five, an open-ended round can create artificial demand. Okay, I'd have to understand the distinction between 4 and 5 a little bit better. 6, timing between rounds may lead to pent-up demand. Okay, I'd like to see if there are any comments. I don't see any written ones at the moment. Let me see what I've missed here. Okay, no, Jeff, you're the chat monitor. I don't know why I'm doing it. I should just ask you.
Yeah, you can ask.
Okay, Jeff.
Yeah, that's fine, sure. Yeah, Jay is Carlos is still talking about the there's still some chat on the previous topic, but so I think it's talking about bifurcation of the two processes that we were just talking about. And then there's some comments still related on the last one about how, it's on the whole trademark, whether gaming. So Steve Coates says several trademark offices deal with contention in various ways. For example, in Israel, you can file a trademark application to establish a priority date, but the terms of who is considered first, the filing date is irrelevant and can be considered the same as a trademark filed a few months later. And so there's a way to manage, in theory, you can manage this process the same way. So I think it's still talking about the bifurcation. I have not seen any chat comments on the cons that you brought up. So if anyone, whoever brought those up the last time, if you have any comments on the what Avery pointed out, the differences between 3, 4, it seems to be the main con here is that they're talking about having a time lag creates this pent-up demand and lag and the rush to kind of get in because you're afraid another round will never open up. Which, by the way, there were some applicants, when we do a survey, I'm sure some applicants will say that they got in now, not because they necessarily knew what they were going to do with the TLD, but because they wanted to make sure they weren't left out of the process.
Okay, thank you. Are there any new cons that need to be added to the list? Okay, hearing none, seeing no hands. So Julie has captured the notes. We obviously have the transcript and we have the chat notes as well. Have we captured what needs to be captured on this reading? Anybody feel we have not captured what needs to be captured on this reading? No? case, I can at least momentarily pass the end of four on to Steve to see whether he's ready for us to move on to five and to make sure I'm not jumping the gun at calling this reading of four done for now. Steve, it's back to you for at least.
This is Steve Coates. I see no hands and no comments in chat, so I think we can move on to subject five, subject discussion 4.2.2, predictability. And forgive me, I can't recall who was doing this.
This is Avery again.
Avery, back to you.
Oh, yeah, I was talking. I just hadn't unmuted myself. This is
Avery
again. Yes. I have this one, and I think I was on the hook for doing the first pass at the next one, and then I got to turn it over to Jeff. Okay, so this is the points we collected on predictability. We had, in this case, we went beyond pros and cons. We had pros, we had cons, and then we had standards of predictability we discussed. And then we had mitigating factors, which we discussed. And as I say, on the wiki page, first effort has been made to build these into the table, but here are the notes at, as they were taken. So I will do, before I do it, is the reading through the right thing to be doing? Or does anybody object to my reading them through? Do I see any red minuses or whatever they are saying, stop reading? I do not. Okay, in which case I will proceed with reading the pros. Well, number one, predictability offers the chance to improve the communication of the introduction process of new GTLDs. Two, legal and application processes are still being worked out and argued, so it's nice to have predictability by having those issues worked out ahead of time. I think that one's a little difficult to parse. Three, develop adaptations to policy based on cross-community effort from the start. We have learned a lot since the first application guidebook, and work in silos is slowly being superseded by cross-community work. And then four, another reason for unpredictability was GAC advice and the NGPC response. Five, there were a lot of entities that applied that lost a lot of money due to unpredictability. Six, publish perfect applications for new applicants to read and give better guidelines for each answer and requirement, sort of a best practices type of thing. Seven, lack of predictability causes applicants to lose faith and trust in process. So the first question is, and are there any hands, is are these pros worded correctly? As I say, I had a little trouble with the parsing of two in terms of what's past, what's future, and predictability. While legal and application processes are still being worked out, and so I don't really quite understand the juxtaposition of those two sentences in that. So if there's anybody that can speak to it, I'd be glad. And Heather, your hand is up. The floor is yours.
Thanks very much, Avery. This is Heather Forrest. I'm sorry, I can't answer the question you've just asked. I'm afraid I have another question entirely, which is this list, has there been any, and likewise the previous list, has there been any attempt, let's say, to prioritize these 1 to 7? Because I think arguably some of these are more compelling or urgent than others. Thanks.
No, there hasn't been. At this point, we've just been collecting. I think the idea of prioritizing is good. I would actually suggest leaving that first cut at that kind of exercise to the drafted teams that are turning those into the request for comments. and when asking the questions, perhaps they could suggest a priority as opposed to us trying to do one in live on a call, unless people think that that's something we should try to do. I think it's probably a good idea, both in terms of priority and I think in terms of just an ordering that makes sense, where you may not put something that's more important in a higher priority, but something that's a more general case first and get down to the more specific case later, or some such method. But I would leave that kind of work to, in the first instance, to these drafting teams that we collect, and then we'll come back to the group with them. I don't know if you think that that's a good way to do it, and, you know, I'll look for an indicator in the chat, or perhaps you raise your hand again. I see Jeff has his hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Aubrey. This is Jeff Newman. In an attempt to try and interpret number two, I think what was meant was that the fact that, you know, we're now over four years since the application period started, the fact that we still have some litigation and certainly independent reviews going on tells us that there wasn't the amount of predictability in the last round that we had hoped. And so therefore, having greater predictability should, in theory, lead to less judicial intervention or less litigious situations. I'm not sure that that's necessarily a provable fact at this point, but I believe that, you know, I think the statement really goes to the fact that, you know, if we had worked everything out, in theory, there wouldn't be a lot of these independent reviews. And I think there is some merit to that, right? If we had worked out, for example, that plurals and singulars were confusingly similar or were not, and that was a settled issue, then we wouldn't have some disputes based on that. I think that's what number two goes to.
Thank you. That certainly makes sense as a reading, as an interpretation of those two sentences. So I thank you. And I don't see anybody raising their hand to say, no, that's not what it meant. So I'll take it that was what it meant. And Jeff, it looks like we can come to you again because we have some fairly extensive chat action from Heather and Kurt.
Yeah, this is Jeff. So on the chat, Kurt is, I might be going backwards, but Kurt's asking, what are we discussing? Are we discussing the pros and cons of predictability? Predictability is the current GNSO policy. And then he's quoted, all applicants for a new GTLD registry should therefore be evaluated against transparent, predictable criteria. I think, Kurt, what we're really discussing, I mean, that's the first part of the question, is the pros versus cons. But I think what we're also discussing is kind of the balance of predictability versus the ability to have some flexibility to make changes throughout the process. And so, as we all know, Kurt, in this last round, you know, you're right. The policy was predictability, and the guidebook tried to create some semblance of predictability, but obviously, certain things were changed midway, which I guess goes against the principle of predictability. So an example is there was a base contract that was included in the guidebook, in the, quote, final guidebook. But then when Fadi had come in as CEO, he stated he wanted a completely different agreement with respect to certain he wanted completely different provisions with respect to certain rights in there, and so that was changed. So the question, Kurt, is not is predictability a good thing or a bad thing? It's how do we balance predictability, which is in the GNSO policy, with a material or substantial need to have some flexibility in cases of whatever we determine that standard to be. Then, let's see, Robin says there's too many contentions became beauty contests and therefore it was totally unpredictable. Carlton says, at Jeff, I beg to suggest that would be a crapshoot. Anybody, not just folks with more money than sense, would wish to reserve the right to judicial review. I should think so long as ICANN is and remains a California public benefit corporation, the right to petition the district court cannot be predicted or denied. Carlton, this is just, I guess, my response to that is I'm not suggesting that we deny a right for judicial review. I'm merely suggesting that the greater the predictability and objectivity in a process, in theory, the less there should be a need to go to judicial review. No, obviously, we cannot stop people from seeking judicial review, but again, like I said, the theory is the more predictability you have in the rules, the more objective criteria, the less, in theory, you would have parties seeking that judicial review based on interpretations. So that was my only point. Heather says, I'm not a California lawyer, but I would expect that denial of judicial review wouldn't be supported in local law. I agree with that. No one, sorry, this is Jeff. Did not mean to imply that we deny judicial review to anyone. I'm just saying, again, that having clear objective rules in theory should reduce the need for interpretations and therefore having those interpretations challenged. So thanks, Heather. That's the chat. Aubrey, back to you.
That's the chat, yep. Okay, before going on to the cons, though we did mention the con already, which was too much predictability in AFLUX. I wanted to ask whether Robin was willing to explain how the contentions became beauty contests. I know one of the arguments that we had when talking about the policy that became the policy of 2007 was that if we didn't have auctions, then things became beauty contests. But I was wondering if, Robin, you could explain in what sense we had beauty contests in the current round, if you will.
Hi, this is Robin. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. Okay, I just sort of connected my audio there on the fly. I wasn't sure that was going to work. So, it seems like a lot of the contentions ended up being beauty contests in that, you know, sort of like who's the more worthy, better applicant in many things. And I think in the community applications in particular, it really just comes down to a TOIN cost for, you know, who gets letters sent and who gets, you know, famous celebrities to be on their side or, you know, it just seems like a lot of it, this whole notion of community that TLDs just sort of opened the door for creating a, what's really just ultimately a beauty contest decision for who ultimately ends up with it. Pretty arbitrary.
Okay, thank you. So the issue was much more a community evaluation issue, but basically, so I would understand that one of the issues somehow to include in predictability is that, I'm not quite sure how it would be put, that having community applications is somehow contrary to predictability, or
I think that's
in the terms of predictability.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. That you know the way that the community applications were designed, or the way they ended up, rather, it led to the kind of arbitrary, unpredictable evaluations. And so, you know, I think, like Carlton said, it really just became a crapshoot for who ultimately would end up with something. And so it wasn't predictable. And had it been, would it have been more predictable, I think we'd have a lot happier applicants today.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to avoid the comment on it. Okay, Jeff, you have your hand up.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I was going to take that concept and take community out of it to just make it a much more generic principle, since I think that there may be arguments, both pros and cons, on communities. But you could say that a lack of predictability leads to selection of registries based on arbitrary criteria. Example, and then you could say, i.e., a beauty contest or something like that, which is what we were trying, as you said, Aubrey, what we're trying to avoid. So if we take out, and I understand Robin's view and others may view the community process as a beauty contest, I think we're going to get comments on whether it was or wasn't. So I kind of like this more generic way of wording it, if Robin's good with that.
And would point out, this is Aubrey again, would point out that in our later streams of work, we definitely will be having extensive discussions on community and to have or not to have, and if to have, in what manner to have so that they are predictable, et cetera. So it's certainly not a subject that we'll lose from this discussion. Robin, are you okay with Jeff's rewording? Robin is typing. Okay. Typing stopped. Please, you know, speak up if Jeff's rewording is not adequate. And as I say, we will be getting back to communities to have or not to have, et cetera, extensively later in this process. Okay. So I've covered cons. Are there any cons that are missing? Any other reasons why we may not want predictability, or we may not want too much or overbearing predictability, or predictability as in 100% certainty? Not that I believe such exists, but any other cons that anyone would want to add? Okay, I see a hand. Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, and again, I'm not saying this as a it's my belief or anything, but I'm just trying to come up with cons. If we have too much predictability, and I guess it sort of goes on with number one. But if we have too much predictability, then, or too much objectivity in the criteria, then it doesn't leave room for groups to object to TLDs that they may find sensitive or may have sensitivities or other issues with. So, for example, when .health came up, if there was too much objectivity and too much predictability, then the ALAC may not have had the ability to object to it. Now, I know it didn't succeed, but that's kind of the point. Like, if there's too much predictability, too much objectivity, then there's no room to hear objections from the community, or there's no way to have your does that make any sense? I'm trying to figure out a way. I'm probably not saying that well, but some may argue that.
It's basically cultural sensitivities you're arguing about, and I see Heather's hand up, so I'll defer to Heather. Heather?
Thanks, Aubrey. Just maybe following up on Jeff's comment, I think it's important that we differentiate. I confess I'm not really sure. Are we talking about predictability in the assessment or predictability in the application's criteria, let's say, in the application procedures? Because I think there are fairly few cons to predictability in the assessment procedures, while there are some clear cons in predictability in the other. Sorry, I've gotten myself tongue-tied. But I think in terms of, what you know, one of the problems that we've noticed is that applications, similar applications being assessed differently. That's a very different thing from the assessment is a very different thing from the applications rules or procedures. So I think maybe that could be clarified in our list. I noticed that our point at the top is 2.5.4 applications assessed. But in the discussion that we've just had, I don't think it's super clear in my mind. Thanks.
So basically, it's looking for, and perhaps this is just a, whether it's a mitigating factor or a con, in this case, it's predictability in application processing versus application assessment need to be judged separately or something like that without prejudging the situation. Would that be a fair restatement? Okay, your hand is still up, so if you want to say yes or no, that's fair, or correct me. Okay, you took your hand down. So I'll assume that you're going to go away. Go away. Perhaps it's being added somewhere else. In the meantime, Alan, please.
Thank you. I'm not sure predictability is the right word in what we're discussing right now, and certainly what Jeff brought up. Really, the question is whether the criteria are more or less objective or subjective, and whether there's judgment calls involved in assessing how the criteria are met. I mean, if you have an objection process, that implies that you're allowing different people's positions to be viewed, and then someone will make a judgment call on who's right, so to speak. Completely objective criteria doesn't require that level of judgment call, and as soon as you have any level of judgment involved in a decision, it's obviously less predictable. So predictability, I think, is the result of to what extent your criteria allows subjective issues to be looked at. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments on this first set of pros and cons before I go to standards, the accepted and expected of predictability?
Avery, you're fading out.
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry. Okay, as I say, no other issues on the pros and cons at this point, so I'll move down to standards to be expected of predictability. And as I say, we will have a drafting team on this, and we'll come back to it before we actually send it out for constituency comment. So standards to be expected of predictability. Pros. And there's a question here, include here or under predictability. Develop adaptations to policy based on a cross-community effort from the start. We have learned a lot since last AGB, and work in silos is slowly being superseded by cross-community work. Now, aside on that one, we did discuss it a fair amount and did note that, you know, this is a DNSO-PDP, though this working group is probably as cross-community as most things we've been doing lately in cross-community. So I just leave that standing there. Two, a definitive list of names banned should be shown to applicants ahead of applying, such as .home, .corp, etc. I would just note that those have not yet been banned. They're just merely on a suspect list, and so I think we should not necessarily call them banned. And, three, predictability on deadlines, both from applicant and ICANN, such as response times for application review, negotiation process, et cetera. So I to go back to two, what I think we're talking about there is a list of reserve names and perhaps other restricted names. Now, a question is there a list of prohibited names other than the reserved name list? And I'm not sure where that question belongs. At the moment, though, the reserved name list was sort of the original list of banned names, such as local and such. Then the board eventually did add geographical names, and of course we have the at least temporary addition of the Red Cross type names that have also been put in a kind of banned class. So we may need to make a note for ourselves that we do need to have further discussions later, because I think we had a fairly definite notion that names that were not allowable were indeed listed up front. It's just that more names made that list later. And so there may be issues to talk about in a variable size reserve name list. I see a couple hands, so I'll go to the hands. Maybe I got myself in trouble. Alan, please.
Thank you. I think on item two, on reserved names or banned names, I don't like the term banned, by the way, I think we need to differentiate between the different kinds of ones. We started off with the reserved name list, which was cut down significantly in this round, so to speak, at least at the beginning of it, to ones where we felt there were potentially serious problems if we used them. We, along the way, we added in a whole bunch for what I would consider essentially political reasons, whether the geographic ones or Red Cross or things like that. We started making judgment calls saying if we allow these, bad things will happen to someone. And, of course, there's judgment calls involved in all of those. And I think we really have to distinguish those from home and corp. Those ended up being restricted, you know, maybe ultimately banned, not because we didn't make the right judgment call, but because we, to a large extent, didn't think about it. If we had understood the issue of name collision, and there were people in the world who were talking about it before the round, but not in the right places, obviously, if we had understood the potential implications of giving out those TLDs, there's no question they would have been on the initial list of restricted names. So to identify those and say don't do that again is equivalent to saying don't make a mistake again, and I don't think we can guarantee that. But there's a whole other bunch of them that were added for reasons that are not nearly as solid and strong. Thank you.
Thank you. Heather, please.
Thanks, Aubrey, and apologies. I'll do my best not to hang up at the end of this intervention. Another question. Do we have scope within this group to go back to the work of the Reserved Names Working Group and their report to evaluate that and see if we have any changes on that view, or is that out of scope? Thank you.
I would believe that it was in scope, but I'll allow other people to join, but I see absolutely no reason why that would out of scope. Jeff, you have your hand up, and please, with whatever you were going to say, also feel free to chime in on the scope issue.
Yeah, thanks, Aubrey, and that's what I was going to comment. I just to Heather, I would say that we have to go back to the Reserved Names Working Group as that's still outstanding GNSO policy. So we would go back to that, and then we would update it with anything we've learned from this past round, and include those on or include those findings in the in this for this report or for this group. But I also think that there needs to be it's more than just a list itself, but it needs to be a predictable process on how to get to whether to reserve names in the future. So right now, for example, we have the government's trying to decide what the best way is of reserve names. But hold on a sec. Oh, sorry. So had a child come in here. So we need to figure out a process, a predictable process on how to add additional reserve names, because right now you have the governments talking about what names should be on it, and they're going straight to the board as opposed to having it through policy development. So having a predictable process as well as having this list is going to help us in the future. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I see no other hands up. Is there anything, Jeff, that we've missed in the chat? You don't need to read it all through, but are there any issues that came up there that didn't get?
Yes, this is Jeff. I think most of what was discussed in the chat were on just, you know, whether to call things blocked or banned, or so there's a bunch of back and forth on there. But I think other than that, it seems like we've covered most of it.
And I agree, blocked words does sound much better than banned words. Make us be emotional. Okay, degree to, so anything else on the standards before I move on to degree to which guidebook is final and should be stuck to with a con? I actually, in that list, is that a con for standards? Or is that, because it's kind of bold, or was it a category? Julie, can you clear for me what category that degree to which guidebook is final and should be stuck to? Is that a standard of predictability? In which case, is it a con? Can anybody clarify on that? Or we'll just leave it there under con and see how it works out when we're doing the drafting. Oh, that was a fun noise. Okay. And we have a note from Steve here, Steve Chan, saying reserve names is a distinct subject, section 431. And so we'll definitely be getting to that. Then we have Jay just put in a thing, censored words, Carlton needs a censored kind of content management, which makes ICANN have the vapors. And it is true, we must stay away from content control. And so if names are blocked, they are not blocked necessarily because of their content, but that remains to be discussed. Mitigating factors. So I'll move on then. I see no hands, no objections to moving on. Mitigating factors. Pros. It was a suggestion that ICANN board analyzes and makes decision on GAC's input, the final AGB principles, and agree with GAC not to change rules for applicants after applications have been submitted. In this way, we would not experience such things as sensitive strings, closed generics, two-letter release applications, etc., etc. And then two, as mitigation, we might have approval with the same mechanisms already in place in registry agreements for changes to the process that are not secured. Is this a reference to the RCEP process? I'm just asking if that's what's meant. Any clarifications, comments, additions to the pros in mitigation? Nope. Ruben says nope, it was to the registry amendment process. Thank you. I'll be specific about that in place of registry amendment process. No, that applies to the second. It's Julia that's typing. That one needs to be on the second. Oh, not the first one. Thank you. Okay. Any other comments on the mitigating factors, pros and cons? Pros. Cons, we had none. Okay. And I want to thank Julie for the typing she's doing and keeping track of this. So we saw our way through the predictability, quite extensive set of discussions. The drafting team on this one will have a good piece of work to occupy them.
So is there anything else on these before we call it done for the moment and move to the next step, which is drafting team? And as people notice, there's going to be a lot of drafting team. So I'm hoping there's lots of people that volunteer, and I'm hoping that, you know, there's a variety of people volunteer, perhaps for one, but not necessarily for all, and unless you're a totally mad, you know, wordsmith, and in which case, you know, having you volunteer every day would be wonderful. But, you know, volunteer for the one where you have the clearest sense, please. Okay. Before I move on, I want to notice that we essentially have 10 minutes left. Jeff says he has a nasty thunderstorm here, so if he gets disconnected, that is why, but he's still here for now. Thank you, Jeff, and good luck with the thunderstorm. Okay, so if there's nothing else on this, Lori says here too, and tornado in the area, definitely be safe. Okay, so we're finished on this. I hand it back to you, Steve, and ask whether you believe we have enough time to go into six, which is community engagement at this point, with 10 minutes left, or whether we should hold it for the next meeting.
This is Steve Coates, and I'll defer to Jeff, but given that he's... Okay, Jeff thinks we should do it.
I still had the token on that one. On community engagement, I still had the token, and then it was, and then Jeff was taking over on application submission limits, which I'm sure we're not getting to today. Jeff says he thinks we should go to any other business. I'm fine with that. I will not argue with that. We would have to start off, Kevin, anyhow, with a description from Steve Chan on the excerpt that he's put out. Hopefully everybody's had a chance to read that excerpt. I'll note that that one is a little different from the others and actually seems more directed at the process of this working group and such than it does actually at the application procedure. But I'll certainly am willing to have us move on to any other business with 9 minutes left. Steve, I think it's in your hands at the moment. Steve Coates, as meeting chair.
This is Steve Coates. I see no hands, and I see no comments being created, so I think we can officially close.
So nobody has any other business. Okay.
Fantastic. Seeing no business, I will officially close the call.
Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you, Julie and Steve, for giving us all these words.
And stay safe if you're in the storm.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And good luck with the tornadoes, folks.
Yes, hopefully it won't get us. Thanks.
Thank you. Today's been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recordings and disconnect all remaining lines. Everyone, enjoy the remainder of your day.